The water we have now is the water we get for the rest of the summer, it seems. While some of the recent thunderstorms that we just mentioned have arrived with rain, there has not been much of that. So the drought continues, and the long, hot days drag on. And rather than feel beaten by the climate, it probably helps to refocus on the issues, not how the drought happened, but how we deal with it. In that vein, the city of Ashland is assembling a drought summit to be held on the Southern Oregon University campus on the evening of Tuesday, August 12th. We can preview that summit and have a mini-summit of our own now with your input. Mike Fought is the Ashland Public Works Director and our guest here on the Jefferson Exchange once again. Mike, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Jeff.
So how did the idea for the summit come about? Tell us about the genesis of this.
Well, yeah, I appreciate that question. Our whole strategy for the drought this year has been one of working with the community, talking about the issues and working on solutions rather than relying totally on our curtailment ordinance, which is the regulatory side of it. And I have to say, I'm extremely pleased with the reaction to the community so far. We talked about this earlier in the season about how it's important for a community to cut back on their water use. Typically, when you see multiple days of over 100-degree weather, our demand at the water plant is closer to 6.5 to 7 million gallons a day. During this drought, our community has really kept it about an average of 4.5 million gallons a day with, so far, a peak of about 4.8. That's really our community stepping up, realizing that we have a water shortage and taking care of business. And for that, we really want to thank the community for all the work they're doing.
That's pretty significant. So you say when the temperature hits around 100, you expect 6.5 to 7 million gallons a day.
We generally see our demand jump up that high. And so we've really tried to work on the messaging about we're in this together. And the summit, the idea of the summit is that that's really going to be about the peak in terms of our supply of water is going to be at probably its lowest levels at that point. Demand will be hot weather. People will be, you know, wanting to use more water. And it'll be talking to the community about where we are at that moment in time and what we as a community can do to get through the rest of the summer or, as we think at this stage, about mid-October. So
something like a refresher course, in a sense, just to remind people, hey, look, you know, we've still got some ground to cover here.
Yes, we have some time yet, and let's continue to work together to solve the drought issue.
So who do you want to attend the summit?
Well, that's really the most important question here today, and we are hoping for citizens concerned about the drought come and join us, hear from a panel of experts about where we are, where are we in terms of climate in the region, where are we specifically in Ashland, what levels are the reservoirs, and what can the real message we want to get out is what can the community do to conserve water over the next 2 months. And more importantly, we want to have them listen to some of the conservation messages that will help them conserve water in the long term and not just the short term. So.
I know we were hoping to have Julie Smitherman, the conservation specialist, with us today. She couldn't make it. She had to call in sick today, and hope she's feeling better soon. Given, though, that you're already talking about 4.5, 4.8 million gallons of water a day, where normally there'd be 6.5 in a year when there was abundant water, there have been significant savings already. What, in your perception, is the largest area that people have changed?
Well, and again, just to put that in perspective, domestic use, or the amount of water we use during the winter, is about 2.5 million gallons a day. And so if you look at the difference between that and general peak series, flows during this time of the year, it's all irrigation, essentially. It's all summertime irrigation. And so I think that the success is people have cut back on irrigation and they're not watering as often. And I think Julie does a great job from the conservation side of this equation talking about ways people can conserve and still maintain their lawn. They also have programs where they'll go out if they get calls and they'll audit individual sprinkler systems. They have a new lawn replacement program that could reduce water use that's actually been just announced. It's very popular. They've already have 50 applications for the lawn replacement program. And again, those are long-term solutions. That particular program could save about 5,000 gallons a month of water usage. And so it's a huge long-term impact, and it's a great program that Julie actually started here, and it's the only program like it in Oregon at this point.
5,000 gallons of water per month per piece of property?
Yes.
That's a significant. That's enough to fill at least a small swimming pool, couldn't it?
Well, again, we're talking larger volumes. Let's go ahead. If you don't mind, let's put that in perspective of how much water we have in our reservoir right now. When you think about 8,500 customers, or roughly a little over 8,000 customers, we have a reservoir. So I didn't say this earlier, but the good news, our Reeder Reservoir is still full, and that's been our strategy, to keep the reservoir full and use other water sources and have the community cut back on use. But Rita Reservoir is a small reservoir. It's about 179 million gallons of water that we have. And if we used 4 million gallons a day, that would only last 42 days. So making sure that we use these other sources wisely is really critical to making sure we get through this season. So what we've done is we've added talent irrigation water early this year. We're running about 2 million gallons a day of talent irrigation water. And that's had some consequence for some of our users because we've had to shut TID water users off for irrigation while we divert all that water into up to the treatment plant.
Okay, we'll have to talk about how that process works. Coming back with Mike Fott, the Ashland Public Works Director, talking about drought and the upcoming drought summit. We want to talk to you, too. Tell us about the things that you have changed in your water use over the course of this drought season and what you plan to do as the season goes on. Back on the Jefferson Exchange with Mike Fott and you in 1 minute. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service, I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking today about the drought. Not much we can do about that, but we can temper our response to the drought, how we use water. It sounds like there's been a big improvement in that already in the city of Ashland, which wants to host a drought summit and will do so, in fact, on the evening of August 12th at 6:30 at the Stevenson Union at Southern Oregon University in Ashland. Panel of experts will come from a couple of places around the region. We'll talk about who those experts will be to talk about what the prospects are for the rest of the dry season, which will extend into September, October. You know, who can say at this point? Hard to say when we're going to get water the next time in any appreciable amounts. But let's talk about drought strategies, things you might have changed in your own life to address your water usage. Join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. So let's run through the mechanics of Ashland's particular water supply. Granted, it is not like every other community. Every community's got its own story here. You mentioned Rita Reservoir, which is essentially Ashland Creek dammed up,
yes,
right?
It is, yes. Actually, it's really important when I talk about the size of Rita Reservoir is about 179 million gallons of usable water. That water source is 100% from the east and west forks of the Ashland Creek, which is also subject and dependent on snowpack. And to put this whole drought into perspective, generally in May, at the end of May is when we look at the snowpack and really start making decisions about whether to add other sources of water. And this particular, and let me go back, in 2009 we had about 41 inches of snow and we had a drought that year. This year in May we had zero snow. It's the first time in all of our records we've had no snowpack on the mountain. And so we're unsure as to how much water we're going to have in the East-West Fork as we move into August and September. The other variable that we have to worry about is that while we're supplementing our water with TID, TID's water supply is also low, and they are planning on shutting off their water on September the 15th. So that gets us back to why August is the date. We're going to look at some of our supply sources dwindling at that point, and so we need to be really careful that we manage that reservoir carefully during that period of time, as well as other sources of water.
So the message sounds like it will be, you've done a great job so far, now you have to do more.
We do. And we have another new source of water that we're working on that I think most of the community has been following, is that's the Talent Ashland Phoenix emergency line construction for that, hooking into the Medford water system.
The TAP project,
the
as
TAP
people
project.
Use Talent
yes.
Ashland Phoenix, yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And the good news there is that construction project looks like we're going to be done on time and have that water available early September. If we need it, that water will be available for emergencies as well. So I think from the city perspective, we've really tried to work out all the worst-case scenarios and prepare for those in terms of trying to provide at least the minimum amount of water, that getting back to that domestic need, that 2.5 million gallons a day. So,
all right, so we still have water in Rita Reservoir. You say it's still full at this point?
Yeah, Rita Reservoir's full. The little bit of rain we just had refilled it again. We've been very fortunate with the rainstorms we've had so far, given that we've had no snowpack. And again, we're using about 4.5 million gallons a day. We're still getting about 3 million gallons a day in the east-west fork and 2 million gallons a day of TID. So some of that water, the excess water, is required to stay in stream. So we're pretty much matching demand with the supply at this point. Where we worry is as that supply starts to dwindle through the summer.
Well, and I don't know if we mentioned the mountain by name. The mountain that contains the snowpack for East and West Fork Ashland Creek is Mount Ashland itself. If you recall back to last winter, it was the first year in its 50-year history that the Mount Ashland ski area was not able to open ever. Not one single day of skiing up there because there simply was never enough snow. There was some snow, but as you point out, by the time you usually measure your last snowpack in May, there was nothing left on that mountain.
That's correct. And we started contingency planning back in February, even though we have historic data showing that we get snow in April or March. We just started contingency plans because it was just trending worse than we'd ever seen before. So.
All right, so we were talking about the TID water before we got to the break. Mike Fautz, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the Ashland Public Works Director. We're talking about drought and the drought summit coming up on August 12th. And you can join us here on the Jefferson Exchange, 800-838-3760, 541-552-6782, jx@jeffnet.org. You had mentioned before we hit the break about taking the TID, the Talent Irrigation District water, into the city's drinking water system. How is that processed? I mean, you run that through the same treatment plant?
Yeah, it goes, and again, we pick it up at the lower portion of the system, and we pump it up into the water plant and actually blend it with the Ashland Creek water as it goes into the treatment plant. So it doesn't go into the reservoir. It actually comes right in at the water plant. And so we blend those, and I got to tell you, we have a great water treatment staff that takes some adjustments when you add that water. They were right on it, and they took, it's a very seamless approach to this because, the water's just fine as it comes through the system.
So. What is required of you to treat water, I notice, has changed a bit over the years and gotten a little more stringent. It was one of your predecessors, Steve Hall, who on a tour of the Ashland Water Treatment Plant years ago picked up a tubular-shaped screen and said, "You see this? This was our original water treatment." Things have gotten a little more complicated since then.
I think, for good reasons, as we learn more about water quality in terms of how that impacts health, I think it's important that we have a treatment plant that meets all drinking water standards. That's one of the things I share with the council on a regular basis. We update our master plans because those things will continue to change in the future as well. As they are able to measure lower levels of contaminants, then we'll see different regulations in the future. So, we have a great water treatment plant. Does a great job of treating the water that we send out to our community.
So. All right. So you pump the Talent Irrigation District water up out of the canal into the into the plant, mix it with the water coming down Ashland Creek, and put that into the system. You mentioned that there's a usual date by which you begin to take in TID water, and you were earlier with that this year.
Well, yeah. And generally, what we do is in May we make those determinations. So if we had 40 inches of snow, we know we have some water that we can use. This year, when we had no snowpack, we decided to start using that TID water fairly early in June, actually. And generally, you'd see us using that in August in comparison. So.
All right, so 2 months early then, which is something I actually heard from firefighters a lot, too, was that the conditions out here are like what they would be usually 2 months later in the season.
Yeah, I think that's probably exactly right. We're about 2 months ahead of season. And the whole point of this August summit is we still have 2 months to go when we hit mid-August there. So
again, a chance to refocus people on what's coming. You'd said something about having to shut off people with TID water to be able to provide city water?
Yeah, so when we're not diverting the water for drinking water, we also provide irrigation water to some of our users. So we have part of the system that comes through Ashland is owned by TID and part of the system is owned by the City of Ashland. And when this system was built in early 70s, it was to supplement our water supply. Since then, we have expanded that, and we provide irrigation water to some users. And some of them on the other side of Ashland Creek out to Weimer, we had to cut off because it takes about 1.5 million gallons of water to pump over that side for 94 customers. And by cutting that system off and diverting all of that water to the drinking water, we went from 1 million to 1.2 million, up to 2 million gallons a day, and we're able to provide more drinking water during a time when we're worried about the supply. So, and I tell you, those customers have been great. They've had to make adjustments because they're used to having that TID water for irrigation, and we really appreciate the fact that they're making those tough adjustments. So
essentially, water customers north of Weimer Street in Ashland?
Yes.
All right.
Well, actually, north of Ashland Creek to Weimer.
Oh, to Weimer.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. All the way. Got it. What is the progress of the, you mentioned the hooking up to the, what will be an emergency supply, the TAP project, the Talent Ashland Phoenix Pipeline, which is essentially a pipeline ultimately to the Medford Water Commission, yes, and its supply from Big Butte Springs up on the shoulders of Mount McLaughlin.
Yeah, and a couple, well, that and also our actual water right comes from the Rogue River. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that project, and again, I have to give kudos to our staff, Morgan Wyman, who's been the project leader, has taken on a project that generally is a 3-year project, and we've constructed this in a 3 or 4 month period of time to include design, engineering, funding for the project, as well as construction. And it's been a very complex project that I'm happy to say that we're going to have completed. We essentially have the pipeline part of it is done. We're working on the pump and then modifications to the Talent reservoir. So we're at this stage confident that we'll have water available early September, tap water available early September. So.
All right, so by the time the TID water is running out.
As we started this project and started talking to council about this in February, that was our target date, knowing that the Talent or the TID water would not be available at some point. So.
Are there limits to how much you can draw through the tap line? I mean,
yes.
Does the Medford Water Commission say, you know, you get up to this much and then after that, no more?
Yeah, it's 2.13 million gallons a day, and we're having an agreement to pay system development charges for those. So we can't exceed that amount unless we pay more. But quite frankly, under the design we have right now, that's going to be the maximum we can pump into the system. And again, this is an important number because it meets, as I said earlier, our domestic needs. If we have no other source of water, we'll be able to meet our domestic needs. We won't be able to irrigate outside if that's the case, but we will be able to meet domestic needs for the community.
Mike Fott, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's the Public Works Director for the City of Ashland. We're talking about drought and drought strategies and water conservation and how the City of Ashland is doing it in context of a drought summit coming up on August 12th at 6:30 at the Stevenson Union at Southern Oregon University. Consider this a mini summit, your chance to get in here and ask some questions and give some of your thoughts about ways in which you are approaching your water usage differently this year, in this drought year, anywhere in the region. And maybe it's not happening at all in your town because your water supply is abundant. We do serve lots of different communities here at Jefferson Public Radio. Join our discussion here at 800-838-3760 anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Nikki at Ashland dropped off her question. She wants to know who to go to or what to do to report someone who's using TID water to water a large lawn during the hottest hours of the day from noon to 7 p.m. You probably hear this a lot because I do see a fair number of sprinklers going in the heat of the day myself.
We do, and so you can call the city, our hotline, which is on the flyer, and it is, I don't see it handy here, but give me just a second, I'll get you the hotline, 541-552-2431. But I want to make sure we put this in context. We are not in curtailment at this stage, so we're really in a voluntary system right now. We're asking people to water wisely. If we get the call, we'll contact the people and ask them to rethink their strategy in terms of using water, because certainly you lose a lot of that water to evaporation when you're watering in the afternoon. But we have not instituted the water waste ordinance or the curtailment ordinance at this point, so it's not in violation of any codes at this point.
Is that somewhat surprising to you, given that you haven't you had talked earlier in the year that once the outflow of Rita Reservoir exceeds the inflow. I think that was the point at which you said you'd go to the first stage of curtailment.
Yeah, I think we talked about potential strategies as we look at first stages of curtailment. Yeah, but what we had hoped would happen, mm-hmm. which is happening, is that Ashland would just step up and take care of business without going into the regulatory side. And that's the good news of the story today is they have done that. So when we see messages where somebody is watering it at times a day it's not efficient, then we just try to make contact with them and encourage them not to do that. So.
All right, we have an email here from Bruce in Ashland with several questions. He wants to know, well, we'll take these all in turn. He wants to know, is TID water running into Ashland Creek in Lithia Park?
Well, it does. There's some water does go into Ashland Creek from TID. Right now, we're pumping most of that water to the treatment plant. Under the scenario that I explained earlier where we pump water back over to the other side of Ashland Creek or the north side, there's quite a bit of that water that goes into Ashland Creek.
And why?
Well, let me back up. We have some water rights, TID water rights, that we have to meet. So that part of the flow is a constant. So some people have TID water rights downstream on Ashland Creek that we have to make sure and provide as well.
All right. So you have to put the water in the creek,
yes,
from TID.
Yeah.
Got it. How much of Rita Reservoir is silted in, Bruce continues?
Yeah, and actually I don't have that. And Bruce, that's a great question, and we measure that periodically. We have two small reservoirs at the head of the Rita Reservoir that are – really they're designed to collect sediment before it gets in the reservoir. We've just cleaned those out recently. Rita Reservoir actually is doing well, and I don't have the exact number, but it's not time to think about cleaning reservoir, the Rita Reservoir at this time. Where we worry about Rita Reservoir filling with silt is during huge rainstorms, major flood events where that sediment just flushes right into the system. And so we're comfortable with the levels that we have at this point. And Bruce, if you give me a call at my office, and I'll go ahead and give you the phone number, 541-552-2411. I'll get that specific data to you. So.
All right, 552-2411. When we're talking about Rita Reservoir and the process of silting in, there used to be the sluicing process, which not go over big with environmental groups because of how much silt it puts into Ashland Creek as you're busy hosing down these piles of dirt in there. Is that no longer done?
That is no longer allowed. So it's no longer allowed. You cannot do that. And so even cleaning out the East and West Fork requires us to go through environmental permitting processes. And so if and when it's time to clean the silt out of Rita Reservoir, it will require the same process.
All right. This is a question, and I'm going to give, since Bruce has got a lot of questions, I'm going to make this the last one, and I don't know if you can even answer this one, Mike, but he wants to know how much TID in Ashland goes to real agriculture and how much goes to landscaping. You have any figures on that?
I think, Bruce, you're talking about for that section that we're using for irrigation, and I don't have that breakdown. We actually just have specific and again, this is a city-owned portion of it, so not only did I not know that for sure for our section, I don't know for that TID section that's owned, but people can use that water for any use, and I don't have that number in terms of how much is for agricultural. So.
All right, let's take some other calls here. We have Wolfgang in Sunny Valley on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking drought with Mike Fott, the Public Works Director in Ashland.
Good morning. It's almost raining here. It could be raining here, actually. I have a two-tier question, let's put it that way. In general, the prioritizing of uses from human to lawn watering to irrigation, food production, and then at the bottom of the line, as far as I'm concerned, should be industrial or stuff like mining, because you can't eat rocks.
Mm-hmm.
So is there a prioritizing of uses?
All right, good question. We'll pick it up from there. Thanks for that, Wolfgang. Prioritizing of uses.
Yeah, and actually, Wolfgang, the way that we work that is our curtailment ordinance actually limits the amount of water each user can use, whether it's commercial or residential. So each individual business and or resident will get a certain allotment of water, and they can use that water for anything they want. So the level, we have four levels. Level one reduces it minimally, but the level four gets down to about the same equivalent of the 2 million gallons a day domestic use. And so at those stages, it's really up to each of the individuals to make sure that they stay within their allotment. Now, for people that use water over that allotment, they will pay four times the water rate for every drop they use over their allotment in levels one through three. But in levels four, they will pay 10 times the allotment. And those charges are there to make sure that people don't use more than the allotment if we're in a curtailment. And again, that's only if we move in the curtailment stages. If we stay voluntary the way we are, which seems to be working really well at this stage, people can pretty much use the water the way they're using it now. So,
but when it gets to involuntary, we're talking about causing some real financial pain for the people who want to use that much water.
If they use more than they're allotted, and if they continue to willfully use that, the ordinance allows us to shut that water off if somebody's willfully going over their allotment. But again, Ashland's just done a great job of cutting back on their use.
There are always some strange stories that are going to come out in any drought year, and you probably saw the one. I'd be curious about your reaction to it, where California declaring drought in January, mm-hmm. telling people to cut back on their water use, and then you have cities in Southern California giving tickets to people because they let their lawns go brown.
Yeah, and although I'm not familiar with that, it is an interesting dynamic there. And in our particular case, this is where we really want people to work closely with our conservation group. There are ways to reduce the amount of water you're using and still manage your lawn and or shrubbery. So.
All right, we'll talk more about the landscaping ordinance and the ability to actually get a non-lawn lawn on your property in Ashland with some help from the city. Come back and we'll talk to Mike Fought, the Public Works Director for the City of Ashland, about drought strategies, not just in Ashland, but all around the region. We'll take your stories, your phone calls, your emails as well when we come back to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 20. It's the final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking about drought, not just about the very existence of drought, but how we deal with it as a society. The City of Ashland is hosting a drought summit on August 12th at 6:30 in the evening at Stevenson Union at Southern Oregon University, with a panel of experts and displays and ways to sort of reaffirm the commitment a good bit of the way into the dry season that there is more dry season to come. And there are more water conservation strategies to come as well. Join us with things you've been doing differently, perhaps this drought year, or questions you might have for Mike, as he approaches the drought in his city, which are probably applicable to a lot of cities around the region. Join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Bill in Sunny Valley. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Mike Fought.
Morning. Thanks, Jeff. I live up here in Sunny Valley, and there's people running without water up here, running out of water. The static water level in my well alone is 20 feet below its average. Recently, the two Board of Commissioners, Simon Hare and Keith Heck, on Monday, approved the conditional permit application of a mine quarry up here on Placer Road.
A gravel operation, I saw that, yes.
Yeah, and it's going to use millions of gallons of water a day. And these two men approve this, you know, a conditional permit application. Now, the responsibility of the politicians in Josephine County, such as these two men, has got to be questioned and brought to task, because people are running out without water up here already, Placer Road, back in January. And more people running without water up here, running out of water up here. And these two men approved the use of millions of gallons of water for a mining quarry. And there's no need for aggregate, any more aggregate in this county. I just want to leave it at that.
All right. Thanks for that. Not much of a response I would think Mike would have to that, but thanks for letting us know about the situation up there in Sunny Valley, Bill. Appreciate that. And this was also what Wolfgang was referring to, because he also was he's a neighbor to this this gravel operation that the Josephine County Commissioners just approved. Commissioners Hare and Heck approved it. Commissioner Walker didn't even get involved in the conversation, because I think it began before she was on the commission or something like that. But that is the story up in Sunny Valley. Let's go to Brad in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Mike Fought from the Ashland Public Works Department.
Yeah, thanks, guys, for a good show and for letting me on. I have a few things I'd like to say. I've been kind of disturbed over the years that SOU, our university, which is supposed to be ecologically minded, has watered right in the heat of the afternoon every year, and every year I ask about it, and I get these crummy answers about, you know, they don't really have a good answer, and they continue to do it. But my main concern is climate change and global warming, and that has driving our hot, dry areas to be even hotter and drier, and our wet areas of the world to get even wetter. And so I would hope that this climate summit, or this water summit that they're going to have, drought summit, that they can talk about that in the context of global warming. And then finally, this year I finally got this little rain barrel stuck up on the side of my house. And I was astonished at how fast that thing fills up. With even a light rain, I can get a whole barrel full of rainwater, and then I can take that water and go put it on my plants by hand. And I'm thinking that there's a big resource in our town that goes unused, because that water otherwise goes down the storm sewers and out the creek real fast. So maybe Mike has some comments about these comments I had, especially about the global warming. I'd like to hear a little bit. Thank
All
you.
Right. Thanks for that, Brad. Appreciate that. Let me tack on to that an email from Debbie and Talent, wondering if the city is considering a future building moratorium since future snowpack is questionable.
And first of all, no, we're not looking at a future moratorium. But the climate change is an interesting conversation. And I want to tell you that our community, when we recently updated our master plan, actually looked at climate change and the impact to our water supply out for 20, 50 years. And so part of the reason that we added the new tap line as an emergency line really was in relation to climate change and impacts in terms of total water supply. And so we did factor that in, and we will be able to talk about that at the summit. And I hope that you and your friends can join us for a lengthy conversation about water supply in general. So,
I know there are some people who are still wondering what took the city of Ashland so long, because the tap line, Talent Ashland Phoenix, the A part really wasn't operative until, actually isn't operative yet. Talent, I believe, hooked up probably 15 years ago.
Yeah, this has been a project that's been on the books for quite a while, and the city invested money to build part of that line, or the capacity side of that line, up to Talent, our share of that line. And in 2008, when the council looked at whether or not to do that, they had some more questions. And so we decided to go back and update our water master plan, make sure that, first of all, the assumptions were correct, and then make sure that we really had the right solutions. And so one of the solution they were trying to fix the first time they talked about tap was peak demand, and that's for peak demand above 7.5 million gallons a day. And so they looked at tap as a way to meet that demand back then. The new master plan looks at building a new water plant outside of the drainage way because of the exposure to the elements that our plant has right now, and start that process of moving that out of the watershed. That would add 2.5 million gallons a day and meet our peak demand. So that allowed us to look at tap now as an emergency supply for when snowpacks were like they are now, or water supply was diminished. So I think overall we end up with a great plan. And the next level that tap would hit would be when we think we need additional water to meet our supply, just our domestic supply, not peak demand, but total water. And that's about 2038 in our forecast, even factoring in climate change into the equation. So
2038, okay. Let's go to Glenn in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Mike Fott. We're talking drought.
Yeah, to pick up on the question about collecting rainwater off the roof, the typical roof, you know, you can collect 15, 20, 25,000 gallons. Say, hypothetically, you had a system that collected 15 or 20,000 gallons. What are the legal considerations, state, local, federal, about collecting rainwater off your roof?
Yeah, how much you're allowed to? That's a good question. Thanks for that, Glenn.
Yeah, and Glenn, and I'm not the expert there. That's really our building department. But we'll, again, at the panel, I appreciate that question because I hadn't anticipated that as part of the summit. I'll make sure that we have somebody at the summit that can address the rain barrel and the regulations there. It is possible to do that. I know several people that have rain barrels and use that to sprinkle or use that for irrigation during the summertime. But we'll make sure we have the right people at the summit to talk about that.
We've had this discussion before, and I honestly can't remember what the deal is with rainwater collection in either state that we serve. I know there are some regulations on it, like distance from house and all that sort of thing, amount of storage. We hope we can get that answered down the road. Let's go to Susan in Ashland. Whoops, let's try to push this button again. Susan in Ashland, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking drought and water conservation strategies with Mike Fott from Ashland Public Works.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm interested in the intertie, the tap intertie, and where it will take place physically. And will it be down in Quiet Village or up on 99? And will we need to pump the water once it gets into the system? Most of our water, I think, is gravity flow, and I just wondered how it physically would work. And I have another little follow-up question.
All right. So how will it physically? I know it's going up 99. I've been watching the work go on for weeks now.
Yeah, and actually, a really good question. I'm impressed. So we're going to hook in at essentially the railroad trestle. We're hooking into our system. We're going to put a pump down at Valley View, and you'll see that going in here fairly soon. And we are going to have to pump that into our system. So it'll actually go into our system at the low end, pressure back up into our system, and provide water for our community. Eventually, it'll get into Granite, and we're working on, as I said, part of the tap project. We're still working on some of the designs, but we'll then pump it from there up to Croson for cases where that's our only source of water.
Croson Reservoir.
But initially, we're just going to use that in that particular zone, the Granite zone, water zones, if you will. But we will have to pressure that back up through our system. Great question.
So essentially the water will taste a little different perhaps on either side of it.
Well, in part of what we do when the project's done, we're going to have to go through a couple weeks of testing impacts to that system as we put that water back into or start introducing that water into our water system. So,
all right, Susan, you have a follow-up?
Right. Well, I would just add that, of course, the Medford Water Commission's water is some of the purest in the Northwest, so I'm really anxious to be drinking that water. But I also want to know if the state doesn't demand a certain pressure at fire hydrants. And, you know, with the lack of water, are we meeting that, and is that going to be an issue? Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Susan.
Really, again, good questions. Yeah, again, as long as we have a supply and we have water in our reservoirs, we can meet those pressure requirements within the system. And that's really critically the point of getting TAP, is that if we are concerned, given the lack of snowpack, no data saying how much water we might see East and West Fork, to make sure we have sufficient water to meet that, again, the 2 million gallons a day. As long as we can get that up into our reservoirs, think about that in terms of how that pressurizes back in gravity feed back into the rest of the system.
Let's take another call. Here's Donna in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Mike Fott. Donna, go ahead.
Calling about the greater water demands due to the significant increase in residential development in the works for Ashland. Like the North Mountain area, the Normal Avenue area, the East Main North Mountain development that's going up, and the Railroad District. How's this going to affect the demands on water?
All right. Thanks for the question.
Yeah, and I tried to address that briefly earlier about the long-term needs for additional water. And so our master plan does is it looks at growth in Ashland's actually less than 1% annually of growth. So we projected when we, as again, those developments that you outlined start happening, when we would need additional water. And that's really 2038, even factoring in those areas that you mentioned for growth.
So you're good until 2038. Yeah. But if you start making a 10-year plan about 2030 or so, it's time to start thinking about the kinds of water.
Well, and again, the TAP then, if you think about that, TAP becomes additional water supply. It's emergency only, but it can become additional water supply in the future for us. So
at this point, it is only for emergency.
Only for
emergency. It is not considered a regular part of the system.
No, we will only use TAP when we have an emergency, and certainly this particular year we have an emergency in terms of water supply.
Well, water being finite, I mean, what do you hear from the Medford Water Commission about how far it can expand? Because the Medford water supply already serves, let's see, Medford, Central Point, is it Eagle Point?
Yeah, I believe it's
Eagle Point.
Eagle Point,
Phoenix, Talent, and now an emergency supply to Ashland, Jacksonville.
So while I don't want to speak for the Medford Water Commission, in my conversations with them, this is a long-term supply. That when TAP was originally talked about, it was for a long-term supply to meet peak demand. In this particular case now, in the short term, we're going to use it for emergencies only, but at some point it can be used for long-term supply. So,
is the pipe you're laying now big enough for it to be a long-term supply?
Well, it's you got to remember it's 2 million gallons a day,
mm-hmm.
And so that's
that'll make a difference. Yeah.
And then there's additional water rights that we'd have to pick up to make that year-round.
So we hadn't talked yet about who some of the experts will be at the Ashland Drought Summit, which again is Tuesday, August 12th at 6:30 at the Stevenson Union at Southern Oregon University.
Yeah, we're going to start off with the county watermaster to give an overview of the entire area. I've heard him speak a couple of times. He does a great job of, I think, framing the issue in terms of drought. And then you'll have me coming back and talk specifically about the Ashland watershed. We're going to have the Talent Irrigation District board president there, as well as the manager, and they'll talk about where their irrigation supply needs are and concerns are. Soil and Water Conservation District. And then the Rogue Valley Council of Governments and DEQ, and I think we just also are going to have Fish and Wildlife there as well. So you get an idea of total impacts from all aspects. The focus, however, in terms of the presentation is going to really be on Ashland's drought and what we can do in Ashland to get through the next couple of months. But we wanted to provide a variety of stations during that first half hour that people can ask questions that are broader than just the Ashland story. So.
Sort of like booths where people are standing next
yes.
to their displays and they can mm-hmm. answer individual questions in one-on-one or, you know, at least small group conversations. I had a couple of calls, obviously, about daytime watering, which I know is a concern to a number of people. The one I notice is not so much that the watering goes on in the daytime, but a lot of sidewalks get watered. A lot of streets get covered with water. You know, a lot of broken sprinkler heads that end up, you know, shooting water straight up in the air. What should people do if they see that in their town?
Yeah, well, and again, this is where Julie does such a great job in our community. When we offer these audits, a lot of people don't know that they're not, the sprinklers aren't working correctly or they're watering sidewalks. As we all get in the habit, we turn the sprinkler system on, we assume it's going to be fine, and that's really part of the message that Julie's able to get out when she meets one-on-one with our customers. And when she actually goes out and walks with them, turns the sprinkler system on, and routinely we'll find bad sprinklers that are wasting water. So I think really working through our conservation group, even if you think your system's good, if your neighbor tells you they see something that's wrong with your system, you should go take a look at it. Turn it on during the day and look at it and make the adjustments. And if you don't know how to do that, call our conservation group or call a local landscape company.
And the conservation number, the water hotline for Ashland, again, is 552-2431. Area code 541-552-2431.
Yeah.
Okay. We will put that up on Facebook as well. And again, remind you that the Water Summit is coming up on August 12th at 6:30 at the Stevenson Union at Southern Oregon University. Julie Smitherman, the person we've been talking about who's not here today, the water conservation specialist. Hope she's feeling better very soon. Mike Fott, thank you for joining us.
And if I could, just one quick thing. This summit is co-sponsored by the chamber, local chamber. So we're really thankful they're going to join us in this summit. So.
I'm guessing it's free.
Yes, it is free.
Okay, good to know. Thanks. That'll do it. Thanks again, Mike Fott.